Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is the collaborating musical duo of Magic Dick and Xu Ning, the legendary harmonica player for Boston's Jay Giles Band, has recently partnered up with guitar and vocal sensation Xu Ning to create one of the most dynamic musical acts to come out of Boston in a long time. The music is soulful, blues, rockin', yet thoughtful, and performed by arguably two of the top musicians at their respective instruments. Since 1969, Magic Dick has toured the world by playing and blowing away clubs and stadiums with the Jay Giles Band. He explains the formation of the duo as this: from the moment I first heard Xu Ning CD Funky Thumb Stuff, I knew that a manifest musical collaboration was about to happen. Xu's sound simply made me feel very alive and induced in me a synchronous alignment of musical DNA as if it was his intention as well as mine all along. I helped it along by asking his manager, Ralph Jacodine, to introduce us at his office. A long and enlightening conversation happened on that day of our first meeting, and now we are a duo, and I couldn't be more delighted. Xu Ning was born in Chicago, raised in Singapore, now based out of Boston. At 24 years old, he is already an international star, a soulful, world-class guitarist, vocalist, and eclectic performer who in a short period of time has caught the attention of the top players in the music world, including the legendary Quincy Jones, who said, "When you see Xu Ning, you won't believe your eyes nor your ears." He bellies all stereotypes, all premonitions. I was simply blown away by both his soul and his science. His creativity and his uniqueness is astounding. In this collaboration with Magic Dick, Xu says, "We wanted to make music in a way that no one had quite done before while remaining grounded in our roots." Magic Dick brings a powerhouse attack with ferocious precision and a killer groove to this duo. I have great respect for him. He has seemingly done it all, but is still constantly trying to push the boundaries of music and chase the best in himself, a true artist. To be working with a true Boston legend is a real privilege. It's my great pleasure to welcome Magic Dick and Xu Ning to the Ray Shasho Show. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thank you very much, Ray.
You're very welcome.
Hi, Xu.
Hey, man.
Hey, Xu.
You guys will be playing some live dates together in February. You've done a very successful music video, a cover version of James Brown's "Papa Got a Brand New Bag," which is excellent, by the way. It's a great video. Are you guys are you planning to record an album together here soon?
Yeah, we are. In fact, we're working on writing and recording now.
That's right.
What kind of tracks can we expect? Are we going to hear a little bit more R&B like the video, or what do you got in mind?
Xun, why don't you go ahead and answer that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're doing a lot of writing. We draw upon many influences, you know, classic jazz and, of course, you know, blues and soul. So, you know, what you get is probably a mix of that kind of stuff, you know. Some in one song, you know. We try to do something real different with our minimalistic approach. But it's mainly going to be, you know, R&B, soul, probably some jazzy stuff too, right, Dick?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add a little something about minimalism.
Okay. Go ahead.
You know, when Shun and I first met, we recognized rather quickly that we were both minimalists at heart, essentially speaking. And so this combination of Shun and I is ideal just from our personal perspectives, because that's what we really dig. We really believe that less is more.
Right. Yeah, I love Shun's voice as far as R&B. I mean, that's my favorite.
Thank you.
It's awesome. And, of course, you know, it's a perfect mesh with Dick, you know, because, you know, Jay Giles, man, was, you know, very heavily influenced by R&B music and, of course, blues. So it's a great partnership. And it's pretty cool how you found each other, huh?
You know, when I first heard Shun singing, which was really on his CD, Funky Thumb Stuff, right away I recognized that I felt like the sound of Shun's voice was in between Michael Jackson and James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is a really good thing from my perspective. You know, without it being imitated, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, he's got his own sound. He really does.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah, it's so cool to hear. I mean, even the Billie Jean cover, I've never heard it played acoustically before. You know, and it's just you know, when you add the voice to it, it's almost like there's a whole band there. What it sounds like.
Yeah. When I first heard Shun's rendition of that, going back a number of years on YouTube there, I was really blown away by that. And I really felt that covering Billie Jean in the way that he did revealed a lot about that tune to me, that I heard it in a totally fresh way.
Exactly.
And that was really significant to me.
Thanks, man.
Lots of praise. For shooting today.
We do have a mutual admiration society here.
Yeah, I can tell that. I can tell.
Yeah.
You know, to get the praises Shuning got from the great Quincy Jones, man, is how involved is Quincy in your music? Does he produce anything for you, or how far does it go?
Well, about a year ago, he presented me at a showcase in Santa Monica. It was this beautiful venue. He does a series of Quincy Jones Presents, and he presents young artists. And, you know, his music, everything that he had done, you know, he's been a big influence in all the music that I love, you know, from his involvement with Michael Jackson to Frank Sinatra, you know. Yeah, so he's been a big inspiration even before, you know, I got to meet him. He's like a real hero of mine. So getting to meet him was just, you know, just incredible for me, you know.
And let me add something to that. I first heard Shun on his CD, as I had mentioned. I first heard him before Quincy heard him. And when I learned of Quincy's remarks about Shun, musically speaking, I found that to be so confirming for me, because, you know, when you Ray, and I'm sure you've experienced this yourself many, many times, when you hear somebody that you hadn't heard before, and all of a sudden all kinds of bells are going off in your mind about what you feel about this person as a musical artist. You know, I had already formed my strong opinion about this. And when I heard what Quincy said, and you that quote that you read is it. When I heard what he said, I pounded my fist on the table and said, "You see, I knew it.
Hey, Quincy
because
Jones,
you know, I had been looking for quite some time for someone to partner with in this particular way, and you know, there were many guitarists who could have been possible candidates, but for me, it was always a but. And it wasn't until Shun that I really felt that this is perfect, you know. And so having those feelings of my impressions about hearing Shun and having it be confirmed by Quincy. Because when I was first hearing Shun, I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought maybe I'm kidding myself because, you know, when you're looking for something, you tend to keep, you may come upon things you think, well, maybe this is it or maybe that's it. Am I fooling myself? You know, is it just wishful thinking?
Right.
And so when I saw what Quincy had to say, it was just like so confirming for me that I wasn't crazy.
Well, thanks so much, man.
Well, like you said, you
not disappoint.
Shun, you'll get your money later. Don't worry. But I tell you, man, you know so many people in the music industry, Richard, and you could, like you said, you could have gotten any guitars, but this guy is so fresh and new, you know, in the music scene, you know, and he's coming along so fast, you know, and I think that was a smart choice. I really do.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
You have no idea how fast. I mean, Shun is such a great teacher for me because, you know, Shun has studied composition. Mm-hmm. You know, he's delved into music and learning about this stuff in ways that I hadn't. And so I'm finding that this combination of the two of us is just fantastic for that reason, because I'm about learning.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's
so much yet that I want to do.
Right.
And Shun is just great in that regard.
Thank you. I mean, I have to say, being around, you know, mm-hmm. being around someone like Magic Dick, mm-hmm. you know, he, like you just read earlier, you know, and I have to say it again, you know, he's done everything, you know, and he has really nothing to prove, and mm-hmm. you know, but you know, working with him, you know, seeing how he's constantly searching for that sound, you know, that sound in his head, and he's always improving it, and he's always taking things to new levels. I mean, for me, as a young artist, to be around that is truly very, very inspiring, you know.
Yeah, you guys certainly learn from each other, and that's great. It's awesome. Both of you have toured together, too, as part of the Legendary Rhythm and Blues Review. Is that right? You guys toured together?
No. I've been part of the Legendary Rhythm and Blues.
Okay, I thought both of you were part of that. Okay, all right.
No. No, but we both recently did a blues cruise mm-hmm. back in October. And while on that ship, I got to perform some more with the Legendary Rhythm and Blues Review mm-hmm. and did a whole bunch of shows with Shun and I.
Now, the cruise, was Buddy Guy on that cruise too, or was that a different show that he was on?
Indeed, he was.
Yeah, he was on the cruise.
Yeah. Great Buddy Guy.
Yeah, man.
So you played.
I know Buddy Guy from 1966, 67.
Wow. Man, I'd love to hear you play the harp with Buddy Guy. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Yeah, that happened a long time ago.
Really?
Buddy Guy and Junior Wells first came
Wells.
To Boston and Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
They had been, many of the Chicago greats, were the blues artists, were
right.
leaving Chicago and starting to travel to perform in a lot of cities in the United States.
Hmm.
And the Jay Giles Band was just getting, we were just getting our start at that particular time.
Right.
And so we were just dying to absorb everything from these guys. And we met with them frequently, played with them. They were great to us. They were just fantastic, you know. It's hard to characterize it to really give you the idea, because you have to understand that Junior Wells was an idol of mine.
Oh, yeah.
And a Buddy Guy. You know, Buddy Guy. And at that particular time, Buddy Guy was scary
mm-hmm.
in the way he played.
Mm-hmm.
Just scary. You know? Just
this
awesome.
Is why it's so so cool to be around someone like Magic Dick. You know, his story is just like every day it's Christmas for me, you know.
You know, the Jay Giles Band has always been a cool, hip, and exciting band. You know, every live performance, and to quote the band, ain't nothing but a house party. It's true. You know, every time you see the Jay Giles Band, it's a house party. It's you know, I saw the Jay Giles Band play four times in the 70s, and I don't care who the supporting act was, and you guys had some huge supporting acts, but you always blew them and the audience away, man. You always did. And let me tell you had one of the nicest and coolest fros of any white performer I've ever seen.
Me and Lee Oscar, right? Yeah. Lee Oscar one time when he had that huge fro,
right,
went into a hat store in L.A. Ostensibly to buy a hat,
right,
and the guy behind the counter took one look at him and said, "Get out of here!
Get out of here!" Right? I think Jimmy Hall from Wet Willie had a fro for a while there too. Jimmy Hall from Wet Willie. You remember the band Wet Willie?
Yeah.
Keep on Shining. Yeah, he had a fro back then too.
Yeah.
You guys, you know,
sometimes it's sometimes just the way you have to go, and you have hair like mine. It's that curly hair thing, man.
Yeah, man. Well, you look really cool with the shades and the black leather, and you know the whole band kind of mesh like that. Jay Giles has always been one of my favorite bands.
Me too.
You know, it's funny. All the legendary guys I interview, everyone mentions Jay Giles Band as one of their favorite bands too. You know that?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, you guys should have been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame probably 10 years ago or more. You know, and
thanks.
And you guys, once in a while you tour, but not very much. What's the latest news in the Jay Giles Band camp? What's going on there?
Well, we did a bunch of touring last year, 2015.
Right.
We toured in support of Bob Seger,
right.
And then we did a tour of our own. I don't know yet what will be happening this year. Let's leave it at that. I just don't know.
Yeah. And Jay Giles isn't with a band right now? Is that true?
That's right. Jay hasn't been with the band for about 3 years or so.
Right. Well, some of my favorite tunes, one of my favorite tunes that doesn't get mentioned a lot is No Doubt About It. That is such a cool song. You guys.
Oh, yeah, that's going way back to, is that Ladies Invited?
Ladies Invited,
Yeah.
That's a great song, man. And of course,
I'll have to listen to that one again.
Yeah, I used to go to a lot of concerts, and I used to work at the Capitol Center in D.C. I'm originally from D.C.
Yeah.
And you guys play there all the time. But the warm-up songs, you know, they play songs before the band comes out, you know, and people would throw the balloon and the ball and all that stuff. But they always play No Doubt About It. Always play No Doubt About It before a concert. And that's where I learned about the song.
Yeah. No Doubt About It.
No Doubt About It.
Yeah, man. You know, I can't even recall how that one goes.
No Doubt About It.
Right. I know that part, but the rest. It's been a long time.
Great tune. Yeah, I saw the Rhythm and Blues review at Knuckleheads in Kansas City on February 2008 on YouTube. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, was that the one? Is that the one where I was getting tons of? We were playing outside, or was it inside the?
I think it was inside a club. Yeah.
Oh, good. So that was not the night that I was getting all that uncontrollable feedback.
No, it sounded pretty decent.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Well, here's what I want you to do, because the last tour you guys did didn't come down south at all. You guys were hitting, I think, you know, New York and D.C. and probably Detroit and all those, and you didn't hit the South. I want the original band to get back together again, and I'll call Mark Farter and see if he'll make up with those guys, and get you and Grand Funk Railroad on a tour together. Imagine that. That'd be great. That'd be great for rock and roll, man. You know,
we did a whole bunch of that. We did, and I remember Mountain.
You play with Mountain a lot.
Edgar Winter, and just on and on, man.
Yeah, but yeah. You guys, you know, because
you too even used to open for us.
Oh, you really? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And Tom Petty.
Tom Petty. Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
But I want to see you and Grand Funk Railroad together and do a tour together because that'll help rock and roll a lot.
Yeah.
Now, I heard an interview you did. That you started using, I guess, the tongue blocking technique, and that was after hearing a big Walter Horton doing hard-hearted woman. That kind of changed a lot for you, didn't it?
What was the last phrase you said there?
Well, that kind of changed your technique a little bit, right? Because then you do the puckering method.
Yes. Now I do both, and it's
okay.
And interchangeably. But at that particular time that you're referring to where I had mentioned in that interview about hearing Big Walter Horton do Hard-Hearted Woman.
Right.
That was a wake-up call to me in a sense because I recognized immediately that I was hearing artifacts in the because of the way he was producing the tones, this technique you referred to as tongue blocking and sort of tongue slaps.
Right.
It's very difficult to get those exact artifacts by playing just with the so-called lip pursing or puckering technique.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this whole thing about these techniques is oftentimes overdone or over-delved into because what happens with most players is they want to make a decision about which way to go, you know, which one to use.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that neither one of them by itself is sufficient for, at least for what I try to do.
Right.
And because of the fact that I, my first instrument was trumpet, and it's still my love underneath everything that I pursue. And in fact, I'm digging it out again lately
Good.
As well.
Good.
The trumpet for me.
Yeah.
Say that again.
I said you and Shuning and could do a trumpet thing, a trumpet track.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Shun encourages me in that regard too.
Good.
Know? He says, "Man, I think you should go for
Good
it."
Good man.
Yeah, I love it when he plays trumpet, man.
Yeah. Thanks, Shun. Yeah. So you know this thing of the technique. I'm glad you mentioned about that interview because, you know, it's a nice question to answer. And every, you know,
right.
anybody who's ever attempted to play harp wants to know about these things.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that I sort of made that discovery for myself, I think I had overinflated perhaps its importance because at that particular time, I was sort of changing everything I was doing to that tongue blocking technique.
Right.
And stayed that way for a long, long time and would only use the lip pursing technique for certain phrases or licks that needed it because of articulation.
Right.
So, but now I've come to the point where I'm looking for even new techniques beyond all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I use it all, and
yep.
It's never done, you know.
You originally joined.
That's one of the biggest things I've learned from working with Shun
uh-huh.
is that it's never done. Even
right.
even our music, our tunes, you know,
mm-hmm.
because Shun is so adventurous with his playing that whatever we may have decided yesterday on how it's going to go could change today.
That's true,
and that's really cool, actually.
Yeah.
On the day of the show, sometimes.
Yeah,
that's show.
Yeah.
Hey, that's keeping it fresh. Yeah,
you know,
why not?
Playing with Shun has been an exercise for me in dealing with real fear, real performance fear. No, I'm serious. You know, sometimes when we go to the stage, because so much of what we're playing is so new to me.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like I'm going to the gallows, you know. And I'm starting to get used to it.
I think that's a good. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it is. You know.
You know what's amazing? You first joined Jay Giles as an organist, right? You playing the organ?
No, that was Seth.
Okay, so you never played the organ with Jay Giles Band in the beginning.
No, I wish I could play keyboard, but I don't have that sort of dexterity yet.
Right. but you know, your harmonica playing became the band's traditional sound. You know,
it did. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't play Jay Giles without without the harp playing. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's almost on every tune.
Yeah. You're a harp player, rock pioneer, for sure, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's my job, man.
That's your job.
and to make people happy.
And to make people happy.
I learned quite some time ago that, you know, it's one thing to be a musician and an artist and, you know, to think of yourself in that particular way. Mm-hmm. I do like to think of it that way.
Yeah.
But when you get right down to it, my job as far as playing for people playing live, mm-hmm. is to make people happy.
Yeah.
And to do that by the manner in which I am, and with the support of the band, of course, you know, we're mm-hmm. we're a unit, an entity. But I lost my train of thought, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Well, you made millions and millions of people happy with the Jay Giles Band. It's such a great party band. And, you know, like I said, you guys should have been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, you know, I'm not a big, they kind of piss me off, and I think they piss off a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know,
it's amazing to me how many fans I've met over the years who the first rock concert they ever went to was the Jay Giles Band.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, it keeps happening. I keep meeting these people, and it's amazing.
Well, I can remember all the supporting bands. You know, I'm good friends with Corky Lang from Mountain,
mm-hmm.
and he's a nice guy, a great guy. But he, you know, I remember Mountain backing you guys up. I remember Peter Frampton backing you guys up. You know?
Oh yeah,
yeah. And
I mean, the list is really a long one.
Yep. You know, I chatted with Kim Wilson from the T-Birds. And we chatted about all the great harmonica players from the past. And he mentioned a guy, and I looked him up, and he was quite an incredible guy. He was, his name was Harmonica Frank. Did you ever hear about this guy?
I have heard of Harmonica Frank.
Yeah. Sure. He was a white guy.
I wouldn't say he was an influence on me.
No, well, yeah, he's one of those guys that you never hear of, you know, unless you look him up, I guess.
Right.
But he played the harmonica in his mouth and sang at the same time.
Sonny Boy Williamson, otherwise known as Rice Miller,
right?
The one who did some recording and you know, toured throughout Europe with the Yardbirds,
right?
Sonny Boy was incredible at all kinds of mouth tricks with mm-hmm. the harp, including sticking it into his mouth like a cigar. And playing it that way without hands.
Wow, that's incredible.
Rick Estrin can do that.
Yeah. Who is your favorite harp player?
Little Walter.
Okay.
Little Walter and Sonny Boy Williamson.
Yeah.
Both Sonny Boys, really. Yep. And then, you know, the guys I actually got to meet, who were my idols back in the '60s, was Junior Wells and James Cott.
And James Cott.
And I'm sure I'm probably leaving some people out, and I don't intend to. Oh, Charlie Musselwhite was another one.
Right.
Charlie became a friend back in 1967 when he slipped on the ice coming up the stairs to our place when we used to live over in a really run-down area of Boston.
Oh, man.
That's when myself and Danny Klein and Jay, we lived together in this rat hole. And Musselwhite slipped on the. He was in town playing at the original Boston Tea Party,
right?
And it might have been the first time Musselwhite had come to Boston. And but Charlie, so characteristic. If you know Charlie at all, you know he has this nice way of speaking, and you know it's like when he fell down, he got himself up slowly, and he goes, Oh, man.
That's cool.
And ever since that time, you know, it was a defining sound for Charlie. And Charlie is just an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
Charlie is deep into blues. You know, he's one of the guys I know who was around, you know, when much of this was starting to happen in Chicago, the way you and I know about it, you know.
Yeah.
But he knew Big Walter from, I think, from even before he came to Chicago. Because I think he might have met Big Walter in Memphis. Not sure of that. But this world of harp players is a fantastic thing. And it's a relatively small world, you know, from my perspective.
I think it's a tough instrument to play. I have a very difficult... I play guitar, but I have a hard time playing the harmonica for some reason. You know?
Yeah, it is difficult.
Very difficult.
Yeah. In fact, I keep telling Shun, man, this is really difficult.
Yeah.
And he looks at me like, yeah, but you're Magic Dick.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Hey, let him try to play.
I'm not Magic Dick, so...
Well, what about the magic harmonica? Is this an invention of yours?
Yes. I was. I have an inventor partner named Pierre Beauregard.
Right.
Okay, and the two of us invented magic harps.
Mm-hmm.
And the design of the magic harps, by design, I mean the tuning layout of the harps. What distinguishes one model from another, you know, one and 10-hole simple harp from another is the tuning layout. And we invented a whole lot that is all covered under one U.S. patent. No one had ever done, up to that point, such a comprehensive, large patent concerned with tunings. And, here and I both fabricated a lot of demo models of these harps, which to this day I still play on and use to some extent. I called it quits about 3 or 4 years ago as far as that endeavor because I needed to not do that anymore. And I don't really know what Pierre's been up to in regard to magic harps, but he's free to do whatever he chooses. And
What's Pierre's background?
Pardon me? What is Pierre's
background?
What's
Pierre's background? Is he a harpist as well?
Pierre is an amazing musician.
Okay.
Pierre is the first guy that I met, who, by the way, he moved up from Washington, D.C., where he grew up. He moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to be around me and the Giles Band. You know, he was a person who was always in touch with whatever was going on with harp. And he made a decision to do that at that point and made it his business to meet me. And we hit it off very well. And for a long time, we really delved deeply into all of what I had mentioned to you.
Hmm.
And it's quite an amazing thing.
Yep.
They are not commercially available that I know of. And but that's okay. Sometime they will be. You know? And in the meantime, what has happened in the harmonica world is that there's been a, I would say over the past 7 or 8 years, past 10 years perhaps, there has been a big focus on this technique of playing the harp, which is called using overblows and overdraws, which is just another kind of bending, but takes some extra skill to it's a more difficult aspect of playing to master, and many people can't really get a great handle on it. Some really do. But there has been sort of a widespread interest amongst the younger players to adopt that approach rather than, in other words, take a standard harmonica and play it chromatically.
Are there a lot of younger players?
That's a very different thing than selecting different tunings, different, you know, layouts of notes on the harp.
Right, sure.
The purpose of which is to make it really great for playing certain types of music.
Mm-hmm.
That was the approach behind magic harps.
Right.
But it seems like the large-scale harmonica community is leaning toward this overblow, overdraw thing using standard tunings.
Right. Are there a lot of young harpists out there, do you think? Are they kind of...
Oh, tremendous. Yeah.
There are. Okay,
I mean,
good.
There are just so many now.
Good.
So many. You know, when I was starting out, there was hardly anyone.
Yeah.
Charlie McCoy, maybe, you know,
yeah.
And the guys from Chicago. That was
right.
About it.
Hmm. Shun, I got to tell you, man, I absolutely love the Shunettes.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my God, they are so talented. The song they did was Get On With It.
Oh, yeah?
It is absolutely fantastic. Are you planning to record or do more music with them?
Yeah, well, currently, you know, focusing on the EP with Magic Dick.
Okay.
But yeah, I just brought them to Singapore, and we did a little small tour in Singapore.
They're fantastic. You could even incorporate them into the a couple of new tracks with Magic Dick, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they're really great singers, and the arranger, Dion Moles, she's mm-hmm. really very, very talented vocal arranger and singer. Yeah, it was a great, fun tour. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to see more of them. I mean, it's so cool that when you get started, they just turn on, you know, in rhythm.
Yeah, right.
It is
yeah,
so cool.
They're alert.
Yeah. Definitely love to see more of them. The
cool.
You said you're working on an EP, right?
That's right.
When do you expect that to be done?
Well, we're now currently, you know, in the writing and recording demo phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we'll take it from there to whether we work with labels or what we're gonna do. But you know, right now we are in the zone where we're really focusing on the music, you know, and just making it the best that we can.
Right. What's the music scene like in Singapore?
It's interesting. I mean, we had like there's a small, very small, maybe two club blues scene and a little bit bigger jazz scene, but you know, Singapore is a country where they import everything, you know,
right.
It's a small little country, so
mm-hmm.
a lot of the music, you know, got to see a lot of great music because a lot of great performers come by Singapore. I actually saw Buddy Guy when I was 15 in Singapore. I got to watch a lot of great music in Singapore because, you know, Singapore has been moving towards expanding their art scene, and they just bring in great acts. You know, I saw Earth, Wind, and Fire, and just tons of great acts in Singapore. But for the local scene, you know, it's slow and it's growing, and it's still a scene. It's not really an industry yet, but it's growing, and it's nice to see, you know.
What are they playing on the radio? I mean, like mainstream radio. Are they copying American music, or are they doing their own thing?
They're playing American music. They're playing Pop 40.
Right.
They have started playing some of their own local artists, you know, kind of mm-hmm. indie folk artists.
Good.
Which
yeah.
is a really good thing, you know. I mean, I think Singapore missed out a big part of the 70s, 60s, and 70s because, you know, that was when Singapore was just forming, you know. And it was basically, you know, still like a fishing village. You know, mm-hmm. so missed out that part of the music, and now it's kind of catching up, you know.
Right. Singapore's always yeah. been the place to buy stuff and bring it back with you, right?
Right. Yeah.
A lot of great deals, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
know.
Well, if you go to the right places. You
know. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
I was amazed when Shun told me how small Singapore is, actually.
How small is it? How small is it compared to...
It's like... let me do like a rough conversion. It's maybe like 35 miles across, maybe 30 miles across, and maybe 10 miles tall. It's like a diamond.
You're kidding me. I never
yeah,
knew
that's
that.
Entire country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's a small place.
Yeah.
And Sun, your guitar maker, Jeffrey Young, you might want to mention something about Jeffrey, because I'm fascinated by that. And go ahead.
Yeah, he makes these, you know, beautiful guitars in, you know, from Malaysia, out of, you know, rainforest wood.
Mm-hmm.
And these trees, you know, in the guitar world, you know, the older the tree, the more valuable it is. And
right.
These trees are like 120 years old, some older, and it's, you know, old trees that was planted long time ago. And now when the government is making super highways, you know, they just cut all the trees down, and the government just treats these beautiful trees as trash, you know, basically
right.
garbage. And Jeffrey gets them at a very low price, I'm sure, and he makes just the most amazing guitars out of them. And he's from Malaysia. Yeah.
Yep. And the ones you play are his guitars, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because I noticed right away the design of your guitar is very different, you know?
Yeah,
I really like it.
Yeah, and it sounds huge, you know? It has a very nice, big, you know, it's regular tuning, but the sound, it's so big and harmonically rich. Yeah,
so is it true the older the tree, the better the, you know, the wood will sound in the
guitar?
Well,
I mean, that's the common thinking for guitars, you know, like you have an older tree, it's more mature.
Right.
And it sounds better. I mean, with the exception of rotting and it going bad, but the older it grows, yeah, I mean, from my experience, you know, the sound is a lot richer. As an older tree, the wood is different, it's stronger, it's aged. Yeah.
Well, you're a great acoustic player. I mean, the way you handpick, you know, it's amazing. And like I said, it doesn't sound like just an acoustic guitar. It sounds like a band playing an acoustic guitar.
May I ask a question of Sean? Because I think this is an interesting thing here. Is Sean, why do you choose to play acoustic guitar rather than electric?
Well, I did play electric guitar when I, you know, first starting basically, you know, Chicago blues style electric guitar and some rock. But, you know, I just felt that, like, with the acoustic guitar, you can just do so much more. You can really be the band. You don't have to just think, like, melodically like a electric guitar. You know, you don't have to think as one instrument you get to. Because I have a deep love for arranging and, you know, playing the... I feel like I'm always arranging, but for the acoustic guitar, you know. And it's that whole thing about separating the bass and the string part and then adding some electric stuff in it, you know. And, yeah, I mean, we always talk about playing some electric guitar, you know, Dick and I. But, you know, it always comes back to the acoustic because it just has that sound.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
And Sean, your acoustic has... some transducers in there, and you run it through the PA system, right?
Yeah, straight through the PA, no loops or anything. Yeah, just
right.
Shun
doesn't mic his guitar like you would sometimes see.
Sure,
you know it's not like there's a mic on a stand near the sound hole of his guitar.
Right, it's kind of electrified in that way. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
which gives him great dynamic range.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it's
and
much more than electric guitar.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, dynamically, you know, you can get a lot from it. You know, it's just strings and wood. You know,
the percussive effects.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I have like a tiny little mic inside the guitar, and that picks up, you know, all these body percussions and drum-like sounds that we like to do.
Well, it's all because you have 180-year-old wood. You can't miss with that.
So do I.
There he goes. I got a question for both of you. I ask everybody that I interview this question. I get some interesting, very interesting answers, okay?
Yeah.
If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie Field of Dreams, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Ooh.
And they could be dead.
Sean, go ahead, Sean. This could take me a while to think of that.
Well, you know, Magic Dick's already off that list, right? I would love to get to work in some capacity with maybe James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely James Brown, Ray Charles, Hendrix, probably.
Hendrix, of course.
Those two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Robert Johnson, that'll be...
Have you played some of his stuff?
What's that?
Have you played some of his stuff? Did you play some of his stuff on acoustic?
I tried to. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I you know, his technique is so unique, and you can't really tell what he's really doing from listening. Mm-hmm. You know, it just sounds so full. But you know, he's a big inspiration in terms of the concept. You know, of minimalism and how he makes, you know, so many things seem like it's going on when it's just him. You know,
right.
So in that sense, you know, that's a huge model that I draw from. I mean, I wouldn't want to play next to him, but I would want to steal his mix, you know.
Yeah, we're both very intrigued by Robert Johnson and
Miles
and
Davis. Miles Davis too, right?
Man. Yeah, Miles Davis.
Oh yeah, man.
That would be
Miles Davis is an absolute hero of mine. I'm speaking directly about his trumpet playing.
Mm-hmm.
And the influence that it had on me. And Dizzy Gillespie, mm-hmm. Roy Eldridge, Louis Armstrong, you know, the whole trumpet lineage for me is it. And
is
John
Miles
Coltrane,
your guy?
You know, all, is Miles my guy?
Yeah, the guy that you would play with?
I'd love to have played with Miles, sure.
Yeah, man.
You know, yeah. Richard, I got to hear you play trumpet. How do I get to hear you play trumpet? Yeah.
Can I tell my wife that? You know, the trumpet is a really funny instrument because mm-hmm. it's the type of thing that requires as a player and as a developing player requires a great deal of patience.
Right.
You know, trumpet is not because of the lip fatigue that can, if you haven't played for like quite a long time. You sort of start over again, you know.
Right.
And it can be very limiting at first. You can only play for, you know, like 5 or 10 minutes.
Yep.
Before the lips have swollen too much, you've got to give it a good rest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And later on in the day, you can come back to it and all that. But it quickly comes back, and I never lost my love for it and my conception on the harp in terms of the sound that I'm going for. Is that thing of trumpet and saxophone, both mm-hmm. of which I have played.
Yep. Yeah, I love the saxophone. Do you think because you play trumpet, that helps you, I guess, with your breath, you know?
Absolutely.
And everything?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. It really does. But there's the one other, the one thing to recognize about harmonica playing,
mm-hmm.
unlike any other wind instrument that I can think of, is that 50% of the notes are produced by drawing air in and 50% say blowing air out.
Right.
So you have, it's kind of like a violin where you
right.
have to master both strokes of the bow and
mm-hmm.
make them even, you know, make them equal so that you can play in a uniform way if you choose to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
smoothly.
Yeah, right.
That's the most difficult thing on the harp is getting the draw notes to resemble and be like what they would be like if you were a horn player that just played blow notes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Whammer Jam
caught myself lately saying, it's the draw note, stupid, you know, in terms of working on technique.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's so taken for granted from
yep.
the moment you first start playing harp that you can get to a point where you don't think about that much. But then all this time later, you know, as I'm refocusing on technique, you get to a point where you go, okay, well, what is the real crux of something to develop better, to get
mm-hmm.
better?
You know? Right.
That's what I'm into, is deconstructing what I'm doing and then putting it back together better.
I think if I hit some of those high notes you did on Whammer Jammer, I think my head would explode, man. There's no way.
Oh, man.
I don't know how
the
you
high
do
note
that.
Thing. My wife has often commented about this. That you know, on the day of a show, I end up actually playing quite a few of those high notes, and mm-hmm. and also in practicing leading up to those kinds of performances. And those high notes, especially the tip top ones, man.
Right.
it's inside your head, and it puts your head in a really strange space. The feeling of you know, once you've done that,
yeah,
that feeling is, it puts me in the zone. It
wow.
really does. A good zone. But kind of like a staring off into space kind of zone.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. What other projects are you guys got going? Anything else you like to promote?
Well, Sean.
Well, I mean, look out for our EP and we are doing a show in Salem. Is that right, Dick?
Salem?
Salem, New Hampshire. Yeah. Okay. No, Salem, Massachusetts, I think it is. Where's
yeah,
New Hampshire? I forgot.
Massachusetts. On the 31st of March.
Okay.
So that's our next thing. I mean, we're taking some space in between our shows to really work this EP.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on Facebook and...
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm gonna promote that address and your website. I'll be promoting that at the end of the show.
Great.
Yeah, man.
And as far as for me,
I'm really putting my focus on what Sean and I are doing. I find it to be all consuming, really.
Mm-hmm.
Totally all consuming.
Well, I'd still like to see a little bit more Jay Giles too. You know, I don't think Jay Giles is finished. You know, everyone's
right.
still got more energy. You know, Peter's doing good. You know, he had a lot of success with his solo album.
Yeah.
How's he doing anyway? Yeah. You talk to Peter?
I talk to Peter now and then. But when he's busy working on his solo stuff, I tend not to be in touch with him during all that. But I think that's where his attention is right now. We're not done.
I hope not.
Yeah.
You guys are a great band. You know, I think he was on stage this month with Bruce Springsteen at Boston Garden.
I saw
that was pretty cool.
They're old friends.
Yep.
You know, I remember when Peter first saw Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
This is going back a long time ago. Peter saw him at in New Jersey at a club, and nobody really knew, except for locally down there, nobody really knew who Bruce was. And you could just, I mean, Peter was really blown away by Bruce as a performer. That is for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him. I distinctly remember him telling us about it and his impression of it, you know.
Huh. Well, I remember Springsteen and Springsteen played a lot of small clubs in D.C. I think he played the Cellar Door, and then he played a lot of Constitution Hall as he was moving up. So I remember when he first came out.
Yeah. Bruce is an amazing performer and just he the man, you know.
I've been trying to get an interview with Peter for quite some time, but not having much luck.
Well, if you'd like, I'll let him know.
Yeah, I'll let him know. The only way I can contact him is through his website, you know, and I'm sure he's a busy guy, but it'd be kind of cool to have him on the show as well.
Yeah, I think
so. Well, I tell you, man, I want to thank you both for being on the show today, and more importantly, for all the incredible music you've been bringing us. And I hope you guys team up and do lots of shows. And please don't forget about the South.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
We won't. I hear you.
Yeah, a lot of people ignore the South, and you know, we got some great places to play here. And I can help you with venues. I got. I helped. Oh my God, I'm losing it. My buddy from Mountain. I just helped him. He's coming in June. He's going to be playing Clearwater. He's doing a show. He's going to be playing all Mountain stuff. As a matter of fact, he's also doing he does a rock opera now, which is kind of caught on, which is pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I know a lot of guys down here. I could probably help you if you need venue. You know, help here
Thanks,
in Florida.
Right.
So, not a problem. It's been a pleasure.
And
good luck, you guys. And, keep rocking on, and especially the R&B stuff.
Thank you so much,
Ray. And I want to say to you, keep up. You're doing great work, man.
Thank you, man. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so
Alrighty.
Much.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, and bye, sir.
Visit the official website of Shun Ng at shunng.com and Magic Dick at magicdick.com and check out their music video, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag. Also, you can check that out on their websites or on YouTube. Also, you can check out their touring schedules and latest endeavors. Also, visit their Facebook page at www.facebook.com/magicdickshunng. And that's their Facebook site. Very special thanks to Brittany Bethune from Ralph Jacquedine Management for setting up this interview with Magic Dick and Shun Ng today. And join me biweekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. Coming up next on The Ray Shasho Show, my special guest will be the creative musical duo of Gary Lucas and Jan Close. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my latest book entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available on Amazon.com. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.